guns in the forest, lost judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Shane Tolt. Just like every single week, it's really nice to have you. I'm sitting on some grass, hopefully where dogs don't pee, in Sacramento, California, recording this. If there's a little noise, cars driving by, that's just the way we have to roll today. And thank you for joining me for a great episode with a living legend. A living Canadian rock legend, Mr. Danko Jones himself, is on the show, and a guy that has a lot going on, and there was a lot to get to in this episode, but also a guy that's a little bit private. So it was really nice for him to take the time to talk to me, as I have been a huge fan of his for quite some time. Before we get into that, I want to thank everyone who tuned in last week for my episode with Frank Arrow of My Chemical Romance and, of course, of Solo Fame. What a great episode that was. The feedback was amazing. I love hearing people get excited about the things that I put out there. And if you want to get in touch, it's very easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com, or hit me up on social media. I try to get back to everyone. Sometimes I'm not perfect, but I do my best. I want to give a quick shout out to Frankie and everyone over at rockabilia.com. They're back as a sponsor of the show. I'm so happy to have them. They are some of the best people, and they really are the best place to get merch on the internet. So check it out. I know you heard the ad at the beginning, so make sure you get over there. We got a new promo code, PCLSS, that'll save you 10%. So check that out as well. And what else? In other news with me, I'm on tour with my band Silverstein. We're supporting August Burns Red on their 10-year anniversary tour of their album Constellations, having an absolute blast, and almost every day meeting up with my sinners. Today we're going to have a nice one in Sacramento. There's going to be a big one at Warped Tour, I'm sure. And it's a lot of fun, you know, meeting up with people, fans of the show, making friends. And shout out to all my sinners worldwide for being a part of this thing, supporting the show, ponying up your hard-earned dollars every single month to be a part of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. If you don't know what that is, well, I talk about it every single week because it is what keeps this thing going on the air week after week. LeadSingerSyndrome.com/all-access. I just ask that you check it out. You pay a little bit of money, you get a lot of perks, including a whole bunch of bonus content. So check it out, and I'd love to meet you all, too, at the shows. So more sinner meetups every single day on this tour. I love it. Anyway, let's get into this episode and my conversation with Danko Jones. Danko.
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Shane?
Hey, man, I'm really good. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Cool. No problem.
This is cool. I've been a big fan of yours for a very long time. You know, I'm from Toronto too, so this is awesome. And I don't even know where to start, man. You're a busy dude. I guess we'll start there.
Not that busy. I manage to do things, and the little things that I do, I actually make them public. That's all.
Okay. So there's a lot of downtime in your life, but then when you do something, you really do it. That's what you're saying.
Well, I fill up my downtime with the stuff that I'm going to make public. So let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. So, I mean, lots going on right now though. I mean, we got a book, we got lots of touring, a new Danko Jones album. I mean, probably so many other things I'm not even thinking about. The podcast, which has been going on forever. Amazed you even have the time to talk to me on Monday morning.
Oh, well, I mean, I have these few hours set aside to do interviews today. So awesome. I know we were scheduled to do one a few weeks ago, but you were on a plane. So.
Yeah, I had a, it was, you know, just typical. I knew I had a pretty small window. I was like, you know what? It's going to be fine. I have like 2 hours. Like, there's no way the flight's going to be delayed 2 hours. And then it was, you know, the one time. Yeah. You know, because I feel like, and I know you're a guy that travels a lot and you guys are in Europe constantly. I feel like it's gotten better to where I feel like the delays are fewer and far betweener than they used to be. But every now and then it'll still fuck up your day.
No, I disagree. I've gotten 6 travel vouchers in the last 3 months.
Oh my God. Well, I wonder if it has to do with those airplanes, you know, them basically having to stop using them. That's got to be, you
maybe
know, whatever they're called, the air, the triple, whatever. No,
right.
Max, Boeing, something, Matt, I don't know. I'm not an airplane man, but, it's got to have something to do with that. Because when that first happened, I was like, okay, they have all these flights scheduled. What are they going to do? Right? I mean, they don't keep planes sitting around.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. But it might have been because of that. It did happen around that time.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. For the most part, I've had very good luck. But yeah, I apologize for having to cancel on you before. But this is great, man. Are you in Toronto right now?
Yeah, I am.
How about those Raptors, man? Are you a fan?
JC in our band, he's been a fan since day one. So
yeah.
It meant a lot to him. I mean, when we're on tour, he always, you know, is watching the game if it's happening, or else he'll stay up and watch it late into the morning. I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for Toronto, but I'm not really a sports guy, you know.
Right. No, it's. I just wonder. You know, I mean, it's impossible to ignore. I don't know if you live in the downtown core or which, you know, part of the city you live in, but I moved away from Toronto a couple of years ago, and I'm out in Windsor actually now. But,
oh, wow.
I know. But I lived in downtown Toronto for 8 years, and I just can't even imagine like seeing the photos and videos on TV. Were you right there experiencing just the mayhem after they won?
Well, I don't live downtown, but where I live, there was definitely celebrations in the street. So
so
you could hear it all the way till I think 2 o'clock. But I conked out, so I was told till 2. So
very cool, man. So let's start with your podcast, man, because this is a podcast, and I've been doing this for about 3.5 years, and I definitely didn't get in, you know, on the ground floor. I mean, there, you know, podcasts have been a thing for well over a decade. But, you know, honestly, I was trying to find out when you started doing podcasts, and I got sick of scrolling back that far, and I gave up. So I don't even know. I know you've been doing it for years and years and years. How did that start for you? Because it's you know, it's a format that's, you know, not that old in terms of popularity.
Well, I started doing the one that I currently do in 2011. Wow. And before the, it's called the Official Danko Jones Podcast instead of the Danko Jones Podcast, because in 2004, 2005, our webmaster at the time kind of convinced me to do what he called a podcast back in 2005. So I did a few podcasts. The format or the medium hadn't really formulated the way it has now. So I interpreted it to mean like road reports. So we would be on the road and I would just, you know, talk about into a mic about, you know, what we had done. Didn't know that you could, you know, bring on guests. Didn't know that you can lace it with music or introductions or other songs. And to be honest with you, the technology like GarageBand and kind of laptop apps hadn't been developed for podcasting yet.
Sure.
So I did about, I think, 5 or 6 or 7 and abandoned it until 2011. But there was still online, I think there were still some posts about the first podcast. So we called it the official Danko Jones podcast, and I did it with my friend Nick Flanagan as a co-host. And Nick is in the Toronto scene. He's a comedian about town, and also he was the singer of many punk rock bands, Brutal Knights, Teen Cred Combo, I'm forgetting, Killer Elite. So Brutal Knights is the band that I think brought him over for some sort of extensive touring. Now he's in a band called Wrong Hole with Andrew from the Deadly Snakes. So he, you know, between the comedy and the punk rock and the fact that him and I have known each other for so long, and we have a dynamic where back in 2011, we had been friends forever, but we had a dynamic where we honestly argue all the time, to the point where I didn't talk to him for about a year between, I think, 2016 and 17.
No, I know. It was like weird when I was just scrolling back, because I've listened to your show off and on. But yeah, I was like, oh, this is like, there's a point where he's gone and then he comes back. And it's like, it's just funny how you can love your friends and hate your friends, I guess, at the same time.
Well, it was easy to cut him out of my life because he was living in LA at the time.
Okay.
So he had gone to LA to, write comedy and do stand up. And he's since moved back to Toronto, and he does his own podcast, the Nick Flanagan Weekly podcast. But him and I, you know, we'll get together whenever. But, you know, the time he was away, I kind of got used to just doing it myself. And plus, when I'm on the road, if I'm playing a festival or someone's around me, I'll just do it myself.
No, absolutely. Well, you've got some incredible guests, too many to list, but... and you do the show biweekly, which is probably smarter, because I do my show every week, and sometimes it can be a little crazy, getting it ready and stuff. But is it hard for you when you're on tour to find the time and figure it out? Do you do your own editing? Do you have someone helping you with that? Or
no, I do everything myself except upload it to iTunes, and I could pretty much do that if I wanted to, but it's just easier for our webmaster. Mm-hmm. I just send him the edited episode, and then he takes it from there onto iTunes and Spotify and all the other platforms. I do it by myself. Doing it biweekly makes it a lot easier, and I can pace myself. I also do like a 1,200 word introduction, sometimes like anywhere between 800 and 1,500 word introduction for the guest, and editing, which sometimes is maybe an over an hour discussion, can be time consuming. And absolutely, I do that on days off when I'm on tour. So most people in bands, I have to assume, want to look at the sites and be a little bit of a tourist. But when I'm on the road, I'm not there to be a tourist. I'm there to play the shows. And even on days off, I mean, we've been touring abroad for 18 years. I don't need to see like some church in a city that I've been to like,
of course,
eight times. So,
of course, I know.
So actually, you know, what happens is on the road, I really just ended up trying to busy myself. And so I wrote articles for magazines and do this podcast. I also have another podcast. It's called the Regal Beagle Podcast. I've been doing it for 2 years. And it's a podcast that in chronological order, we discuss the 70s, 80s sitcom Three's Company. And I've had everyone from Scott Reeder from Caius, Blaine Cartwright from Nashville Pussy, Murray Lightburn from The Deers, Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace. They've all been on the podcast talking about episodes. So I do that weekly. That's a weekly podcast. And then I have my, like, the real one, I should say, a bi-weekly, and that one can be anywhere between 40 to 60 minutes, and it's really just all like whatever I like. So there's nobody telling me, you know, what guests I should have, or you know, there's been over the years people who said, hey, you should have this band, or can we be on your podcast? But if I don't have a connection to you in any sort of way, like I'm not a good interviewer unless I'm really, really into the guest, and then it makes it really easy. For example,
this past week, we uploaded an episode with Michael Sweet from Stryper. Now, Stryper are Christian metal band.
Yes, oh, I'm well aware.
And I loved them when I was growing up and lost touch with the band. I didn't even know they were around, and recently found out that, no, they've been putting out some pretty serious heavy albums in the last 6 years. And so I reached out to Michael, and we had sort of a mutual kind of, we were on a song together years ago, so that was some sort of mutual thing. And then talking to him, I could easily interview Michael because I was such an old Stryper fan. And so, you know, that makes it easy. And then genuinely get friends. So, you know, Nick Flanagan is, you know, just a friend, and Damien Abraham from Fucked Up is a friend. So then we just have different discussions, you know. So, but at least I can participate. Whereas if it was an interview that I had to do because it was an assignment,
right?
It would just devolve into, you know, what's your favorite song? You know, that kind of shit I hate. And I already have to do enough of those kinds of interviews. I don't want to put anyone else through them.
Well, yeah. But, you know, sometimes I find when it's a guest, you know, like, for example, for me, you know, NoFX was one of my favorite bands growing up. It's a band I have, like, every 7-inch they ever put out. I can tell you every B-side from, you know what I mean? So finally, I get Fat Mike from NoFX on the show. And it's almost sometimes harder to ask questions because you already know everything. It's like, what do I ask this person when I already know everything? You ever have that happen to you?
No, because I always make sure that I have a certain angle with a guest, no matter how much of a fan I am of them. So with Michael Sweet, I didn't talk about the albums that I loved. I talked about the three new Stryper albums that they put out since 2013 that were pretty impressive to me, and that kind of started up from where I remember them back in, you know, 87. So it was kind of a good angle. And of course, you know, everybody wants to talk about their latest album rather than, you know, he doesn't want to talk about the album that went platinum for the millionth time. He wants to talk about, you know, the new albums that they've put out. So that was a great angle. And plus, there's other things about him that I had researched that people may not bring up. Like he was the singer for Boston for 4 years. That a lot of people don't know.
No, so I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So that kind of stuff is, you know, it's easy to talk about if it's a guest that's got many facets and many shades about them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my angle with you, I guess, is it's kind of difficult to find information about you for a person that puts yourself out there all the time and has for so many years. It's kind of hard to really get information about you, like even how old you are, anything like that. It's like, okay, I just want basic info on Danko Jones. Maybe the problem is that when I look up Danko Jones, I find Danko Jones band, Danko Jones the trio, Danko Jones the podcast. And it takes you away from the person that you are, because you the person you are isn't Danko Jones the guy all the time. It's Danko Jones all the things that you do. So I find that very interesting.
Right. Well, I don't really talk about my personal life too much in interviews. So that might have something to do with it.
Yeah. Why not?
Because my personal life is my private life. And I really get uncomfortable talking about anything past rock music.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I see that's the shit that I want to know, though, is like what makes you that? What made you love rock and roll so much and love?
Well, that's easy. And, I mean, I could talk about that, and I've spoken about that. But, you know, for example, yesterday people were uploading pictures of their father because it was Father's Day. Yeah. I'm never going to do that in a million years. And but I have gotten personal in the last year in terms of, you know, we got, I'd say, what is it now? 9 months ago, 10 months ago, I've got my dog, Ralph, who's a rescue dog. So I posted pictures of Ralph, and I guess I've outed myself as somewhat of a lefty from my anti-Doug Ford posts and anti-Scheer posts. But that's not anything that's scandalous, I don't think. You know, I mean, we're punk rock. And I think there was something that went viral a few months ago where people were saying, you know, punk rock is naturally left. I kind of tend to agree with that.
Absolutely.
But it's funny that, you know, we're a garage punk band. So we came out from a different stream of punk rock back in the 90s. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we veer right. I think a lot of people, and when you graduate into kind of like a mainstream radio rock world like we did from like the local punk rock scene that we came out of, I think a lot of people, and plus we sing a lot about sex and girls and women, and I think people think that we're automatically kind of one way. And it's really interesting because if you look back into our past, we're a garage punk band. And if you really want to look back into my personal past, I mean, I'm a metal kid who found out about punk rock. And so that's about as personal as I've gotten. I've gotten that recently. And that's since, you know, Doug Ford became premier and Andrew Scheer looks like he might be the prime minister.
Oh, man. I can't stand that. I can't stand that motherfucker, man. He's like... Don't you just get he gives me the creeps, dude. Like, straight up.
Well, here's the thing is the good thing is crazy as these days feel like, you know, with incels and alt-right and Faith Goldie and Andrew Scheer and Rebel Media and Doug Ford, I think that it's kind of a quote that I heard Henry Rollins say recently, and this is what Joe Strummer trained you for. And that, yeah, like, I think now is the time to at least say something. I've had talks about this with other people, and you know, there's always someone who's going to go, stay in your lane. Well, this is my lane. You know, this is my lane. I'm a fucking loudmouth for a living. And so that's what you get when you follow me on Twitter. Yeah, I haven't really been like that in recent years, you know, and that's a personal reason why I decided to start, you know, getting a little more vocal as to where I stand on the political spectrum. But also, things are getting a little bit extreme that you have to say something.
If I agree.
Something. So, I was sick during the Doug Ford Doug Ford rally on Queens Park. I was sick. I had a sign and everything, and I really wanted to attend the rally. But I've attended a few Doug Ford, anti-Doug Ford or anti-racist at rallies recently. Women's March, all these rallies. And I always post about it. And whether you agree with, you know, what the rally stands for or not, sorry, this is how, you know, this is me, you know. And that's about as personal as I'll get in terms of, you know, my personal life, my family life, you know, my relatives or my family or friends or something like I get really uncomfortable talking about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all right. Is there a fear? I mean, you say, you know, your band started on the radio. That's how I heard about you. I think I heard.
No, we didn't start on the radio.
No. You got your start, I mean, in the mainstream, you know, through mainstream radio, which.
I think we started getting played on mainstream radio in 99, and we started in 96. And between 96 and 99, we had already done tours with the New Bomb Turks, The Makeup, Blonde Redhead. We pretty much played with all the DC bands. Like we were going to DC fairly regularly. I mean, I was at Pirate House. I mean, I stayed at Guy Picciotto's house.
Yeah, man.
The Nation of Ulysses guys. And then we didn't get anywhere. We didn't get signed to one of the cool labels that we wanted, that we loved, like Crypt, In the Red, Touch and Go. None of these labels. There was some interest in a few of them. I won't say which ones, but then they balked. And it really shattered me because I was a huge fan of some of these labels. And we had, it was kind of a perfect storm where we got rejected by a lot of these cool indie labels that we loved. The technology was growing in terms of Pro Tools, where you didn't need to spend so much money in the studio to make a decent recording. And at the same time, getting disillusioned by the giant pose that was garage rock, garage punk, which is a lo-fi aesthetic, like deliberately sounding bad, deliberately sounding like you recorded it in a garage. To me, back then in 1998, was a giant pose. If you could afford it because of the technology, then you trying to sound deliberately terrible was a giant pose to me.
Yeah.
So we transitioned into from a garage punk band to a hard rock band, which meant better sounding guitars on recordings, bridges in songs, like better arrangements, and I actually sang rather than screamed. So there's a marked difference in how we transitioned. But between 96 and 99, we were hanging out with all the DC punks and touring with Blonde Redhead in the States and hanging out with the New Bomb Turks. We were like set. That's all I wanted to be. Between 96 and 99, the only thing I wanted to be on was a cool American, either garage punk label or a cool big indie label like a Matador or a Touch and Go.
Right.
But none of that came to fruition. So when everybody in Canada started to find out about us was when we said, screw that, let's just do this. And we got picked up because the buzz on us was so big by then, because we hadn't released anything.
Yeah.
We got added on to commercial radio right away. Much Music started to play the video that we made. And that's how I think a lot of kids and younger generation found out about us. Whereas back in Toronto, we had already carved the scene. So
totally.
To speak.
Totally. But, you know, and I don't want to harp on this leftist, left versus right thing that we were talking about, but I do kind of want to finish the point. And it's that you guys came from punk rock, and, you know, you got big on Much Music and on the radio, and your sound to me, I guess, as a punk rock kid, I kind of got it. I kind of got that you were a garage punk band that was maybe a little bit more polished. But a lot of people heard it as, oh, this is like some kind of classic rock, you know, because no one really had done what you had done, at least commercially, in Canada. So I think a lot of people took that as like, oh, this is like working class, you know, right wing music. No, that's a terrible thing to say. That's not what I mean. But do you have a fan base that comes from that?
When you kind of hit the mainstream, no matter how hard you hit, if you're able to puncture through the mainstream, you're basically going to get whoever you get who listens to it. It's all facets, right. all sides of the general public, and I mean I don't reject anyone who digs our band. At least we can meet. You know, via sound, like we like the same sounds. That's a meeting ground. That's a starting point. But I've just found recently that you just kind of realize, you know, sometimes that, oh, wow, I just always assumed that, you know, everybody who liked our band kind of, you know, rolled with where we were politically, but we never even publicly made that clear, or at least I never made where I stood publicly clear. And it's just, you just live in your head sometimes, and then you quickly realize, no, this is, the general public is everyone, and that's all sides, left and right and middle and everything. And I'm cool with that, man. I don't mind people who are right-wing. I'm not against people who are right-wing. It's the alt-right that right. kind of rubs me the wrong way. I find that the right these days is incorporating a little bit of the alt-right or being in bed with them to a certain degrees, you know, speaking alongside them and publicly. It's just not cool. So yeah, things are kind of getting gray, and I think sometimes I can't just sit there when I have like a, you know, I have to say something. Like, for example, there was a Doug Ford push on this whole like beer and corner stores 2 weeks ago, where all the MPPs like made their own videos. Some of them were absolutely hilarious, and I had to comment about them. I mean, they were just too
funny. What was that? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, Doug Ford is breaking the contract with the beer store, and it's going to cost the province $1 billion, and 7,000 unionized jobs are in jeopardy by breaking the contract. And he wants to put, you know, beer in corner stores, and he's selling it so, you know, local merchants will benefit. And so what he did is he got all the people in his party to go to their local variety store and make some sort of homemade video on their iPhones,
right,
about why there's no beer in the convenience store. And meanwhile, you know, making cuts to education and health, this is your priority?
Right.
I mean, I can't believe this isn't even in the top 30, 50 of priorities. I mean, I think I'm with a lot of people where we're just kind of scratching our heads going, what's going on?
Yeah.
The fact that he adopts this whole like promises made, promises kept, exact Trump line,
right,
is scary too. But anyways, that's a different topic entirely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, I thought your podcast is called Lead Singer's Disease, right?
Or Lead Singer Syndrome. Yes, yes.
I thought I was going to be talking about tips on how to sing.
Well, we can talk about that. Absolutely. It's amazing how sometimes I do these episodes and we don't even talk about singing, you know, but I do like to talk about that. You guys have a great fan base in Europe. You have for a long time. You talk about punk, you know, punk rock labels being on Bad Taste for years. You know, label out of Sweden that's known for, I think of like Millencolin and Satanic Surfers and, you know, all that.
Surfers. No, Millencolin were on...
Burning Heart. That's right. I mixed them up.
It's okay. They're all friends. We're all friends. we love Millencolin.
I love Millencolin too. You're traveling over there all the time. You're going on tour. You got the jet lag to contend with. Is it hard for you as a singer to go over there and have to perform?
In terms of traveling and jet lag, we usually fly, and when we land, we have that day off.
Yeah.
And so usually what I do is I stay up for the whole day.
Yeah.
No matter how jet lagged I am, I just stay up. Whereas other people will go directly to bed and it just screws up your clock. The only way to get your clock up is to clock back to normal is if you stay up and then go to bed at around 10 o'clock that night. And then you get up and you usually feel refreshed and you can sing because your voice snaps back after 8 hours of sleep.
I think it's funny, like when you fly over, we just did a tour in the UK, which is actually why I it was just a festival in the UK, but that was the flight that got messed up when I couldn't call you. And it's funny because that flight isn't that long from Toronto to London, you know, and whenever I'm on the plane, I'm like, can we just do another lap around a couple times so I can get my 8 hours of sleep so I can make it through the whole day? Because there's nothing worse than when you don't even know what time it feels like and you're trying to stay awake and you're like, I just got to get to like 9:10 and it's like you're crashing out. But, it is, the struggle is definitely real with that. But I know guys that actually will go a few days early to really try to acclimatize before they play their first show.
Right. No, we usually just do it a day. We'll have just one day full where we're at the place, and then we're good to go. There's been times where I wasn't able to sleep, and then I have that happened once where I got a virus and it just piled on and I wasn't sleeping and in the bus I had the coldest bunk and that's the worst for a singer. And yeah, it was a nightmare actually, but you learn from those experiences. So definitely make sure that I'm warm and I'm sleeping.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's funny. Some guys in my band, they want to turn it down so cold.
Yeah.
And I am like dying. I'm like, I can't do this, you know? And then of course I look like the one with lead singer syndrome, the diva, but it's true. Like, I don't know, man, if I'm too cold and I sleep, I'll just wake up and I'm just like, no, like my voice just won't work.
It's so true. I'm in that same boat a lot of the time when everybody wants it cold and yeah. So what I do is I always have, I bring an extra scarf and an extra hoodie. And I always have two blankets, like, because we're a three piece, so we travel fairly minimally. Like, what we have, like, about three or four techs or crew, so there is always an empty bunk. And so I take, I always have two blankets, and I always have an extra hoodie and an extra scarf, just in case it does get to the point where it's so cold on the bus, I'm always warm. And that was from trial and error over the years, realizing, holy shit, like, I don't, you know. And it's also, you know, nobody sings, nobody understands. Everybody can play guitar in a band, whether you play drums or you're the singer, or everybody can play drums, whether you're the singer or the bassist. But nobody really can sing in the band the way, you know, a tour demands a voice. So I'm always, you know, and I, at the same time, I also don't want to put anyone out either, because if they can't sleep because it's too warm.
Right.
So it's a balancing act. And I definitely feel your pain in that sense.
No, absolutely, man. So I want to talk about your book. I've Got Something to Say.
Sure.
It you know, I guess I haven't read the book. I actually didn't even know about the book, but it seems very cool. And from what I understand, it's a collection of stories, essays that you've written. Is it something that you've had kind of ongoing over the years? Like, is there stuff that you wrote years and years ago? Or was it like, nope, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a book from memory? Did you use journals? How did you put this all together?
It's a collection of articles I wrote for various rock magazines over a period of 10 years.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of articles, and, you know, we had to edit it out. And my editor for the book was Aaron Brophy, who used to be Chart Magazine, the editor for Chart Magazine. Yeah. And now he works in various other streams. And he was my first choice. I asked Aaron, and between the two of us, we spent a year editing the book and going through all my old articles and just deciding, oh, this is too mean sounding. Like, let's not include that. And there was a point where I decided to just not to take out all the mean spirited articles. So I didn't want it biting me in the ass. And so we were left with all my favorite ones and the ones Aaron approved and edited and everything. And some of these had already been published. I didn't want people who had read it or bought it previously to buy something twice. So right. I got people to illustrate some of them.
Yeah.
And so there's, let's see, Damien Abraham from Fucked Up did an illustration. Erie Vaughn from Samhain and Danzig, he did an illustration. Valiant himself from Valiant Thor did an illustration.
Nice.
Away from Voivod did one. Juan Montoya from Torch and Stallone, he did one. And then I wanted just people in bands to contribute illustrations. But, you know, I ran out of, and some of them said no because they were a little too shy. But then I just started to just ask illustrators. So I asked Mary Fleener, who I'm a fan of. She did a comic called Slutburger in the 90s, which is amazing. And so I tracked her down, and she did like 3 pages of comic panel. Brian Walsby did the cover and he did 2 pages of comic panel. Brian Walsby, he was in a lot of bands, but he's right these days he sells merch for the Melvins. So
okay.
And Damien put me in touch with Brian, who I was a huge fan of for a long time. And then Damien just said, I got his contact. I'm friends with him. So I'm like, wow, he was the one guy that I wanted to have do the cover. That's amazing.
That is
so
amazing.
It was a great way to meet Brian through Damien. And then I'm just thinking here. Gary Dump, who was a big illustrator with American Splendor, with Harvey Pekar. And so a lot of it was based on American Splendor comics, you know, illustrating comic articles. So I just went to the source. And so Gary was really nice and we're friends now. And it's great that I have a connection with American Splendor somehow. I know I'm forgetting a few other ones. And then Duff McKagan.
That was my question. Yeah.
Yeah. Duff wrote the foreword to the book. And that was going back 2013. We had spent a lot of that year touring with Duff through Loaded and his other band Walking Papers. So on the last day of the tour, I asked him, you know, and we had had conversations about writing and he had been on my podcast and we had talked about writing on the road and meeting deadlines with editors, et cetera, et cetera. So last day of the tour, I said, hey, listen, if I ever write a book, will you write a foreword to it? I would love for you to do it. And he said, sure. So fast forward, 2016, we're getting this thing done. I hit him up and I said, hey, Duff, remember 3 years ago? You said you'd write this forward. And then I knew from, you know, being in the industry, it was a very, very loose rumor that, you know, Slash, Duff and Axel were going to get back together. And he didn't tell me. He just said, you know, my world is going to get very busy next week. I already knew what he meant. So he wasn't making an excuse. So I said, no problem. Don't worry about it, man, because I knew what he meant.
Yeah.
And then I think 2 days later in my inbox, he just said, screw it. Here you go.
Cool.
And that was really cool of him to do, knowing what was on his plate. And Duff is just the coolest guy in the world. It's one of the reasons why I asked him for being in – like such a huge band, like a genuine rock star level world that he lives in. He's probably the most down to earth guy in that world that I've met. He is the most approachable, likable, coolest down to earth guy. And then when you realize, well, his background is punk rock, it kind of all makes sense. So it was really nice to have Duff a part of the book. And, then on the back, the testimonials were from Del James, who's a good friend, and he's in the Guns N' Roses camp, but he also used to write for Rip Magazine back in the day. I used to buy Rip Magazine. Shawnee Salt from White Zombie, she also wrote a book called I'm in a Band. I'm in the band. She has a book out, and of course, I love White Zombie, and I've known Sean for quite a few years. And Gordon Corman, who is my all-time favorite author since I was in grade 4. He wrote...
Really? The Mac Hall guy, or what is that book called?
Yeah. This Can't Be Happening at McDonald Hall.
Right, Bruno exactly, Boots,
Who is Bugs Potter? No Coins, Please. And he's still writing books to this day very regularly. And so Gordon and I became friends through the podcast, actually, a few years ago. And so when it came time to hit people up for, you know, testimonials, I asked Gordon. And, of course, he wrote on the back of the book. So, yeah, I sent him articles. Yeah, so it was really nice to have, like, the author of my favorite book of all time, which is a toss-up between No Coins, Please and Who is Bugs Potter, write a testimonial for the book.
Yeah, that's incredible. It just struck me now.
I should mention the book came out on Feral House, so we were going to self-publish it, but Feral House, I approached Feral House because I noticed they were liking a lot of my tweets on Twitter, and it turns out that, you know, they were interested, and Adam Parfrey, who was the owner of Feral House, he greenlit the book, and he passed away a month before the book came out. But it was greenlit by Adam himself, and it was really yeah, it was kind of bittersweet when the book came out. Yeah. But I'm a huge fan of Feral House. They put out Lords of Chaos. They put out Choosing Death. They put out Hardcore by Harley Flanagan, his autobiography. They put out the Source book. They put out Rants, Apocalypse Culture. There's all kinds of books under the Feral House banner that, you know, the first Feral House book that I read was, you know, my first year of university. I read the biography on Anton LaVey that Feral House put out. So they've always put out outsider books. So to be associated with that imprint is definitely a feather in my cap. It beats being on Matador Records, let's put it that way.
That's cool. When you were talking about Duff, it reminded me, didn't you guys do some shows with Guns N' Roses back in the day too? Like about 10 years ago? Like when it was just Axl?
Yeah, it was 2010, and a lot of the people in that band are still in Guns N' Roses, like Frank, who's on drums. Frank Ferrar is on drums. Richard Fortus is on guitar with Slash. Of course, Dizzy Reed never left. He's still there. We pretty much – and then Duff joined with Slash again, and, of course, the whole worldwide tour. But, yeah, 2010, they took us to 10 countries. We played all across Canada. We played in Norway. They brought us to Russia. We played in Romania. We played in, I can't even remember, Finland. Yeah, 10 countries. So, yeah, Axl has been really nice to us.
You got to get him on the podcast.
Axl doesn't do interviews, really.
No, I know he does. I know he doesn't. Yeah. It would be something. So
I've had Richard Fortus and Dizzy Reed on the podcast.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Very cool. That's amazing. So the new album, A Rock Supreme, out now. It's been out for a couple months. Great record. I love the whole thing from start to finish. I think your records keep getting better and better, which doesn't always happen with bands, you know? But this one, you took a bit of a different approach, going out to Vancouver, working with Garth Richardson, instead of making the record in Toronto. Was that approach different? Did that affect the record in a positive way?
Well, I mean, first of all, thanks for digging the record. Garth is, we've known for a few years that Garth has wanted to work with us. And all three of us like something different that he's done. So Rich likes the Rage Against the Machine album he did.
Right.
JC likes the Biffy Clyro records that he produced, the three that he produced. And I like the Jesus Lizard and the Melvin stuff that he did. So between the three of us, we were all really kind of into working with Garth. And nothing against Eric Ratz, who did Fire Music and Wildcat. Those are my favorite albums, you know, that we had ever done. And Eric was amazing to work with in the studio. And we kept it light, you know, and we laughed all the way through. So going out to Vancouver, based on someone's reputation, especially in the music industry where there's egos abound, yeah, I was very trepidatious because this could be a very long, bad date, you know, and so I was really worried. But we immediately found out that, like, you know, the reason why Garth is still producing albums is because he's a great guy and he's not, you know, doesn't lead with his ego. He just knows how to get sounds in the studio and how to work with singers, and that comes with experience. And it was a fun experience going out to Vancouver, you know, working through out in the studio out in the woods there. And I'm not a woods guy, man. I'm a fucking city kid, but I still have a lot of fun, like, making the record with Garth. And we laughed all the way through. Like, that's the one thing, you know, to keep the production going and to make it, to get the best performances, you know, there has to be some sort of lightheartedness in the studio. It's like, first we laugh and then we rock.
Right. You know?
And so Garth, I think he subscribed to that as well. And we had a blast doing it. You know, it was a fun experience. And I think we did come out with our best album. I mean, there's songs on there that I am so happy we recorded, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic record. And yeah, no, I just wonder if the focus is there more, you know, because when you make a record in the city you live in, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to go to the studio, but I got to pick up my dry cleaning or stop at Home Hardware and get toggle bolts or, you know what I mean? There's these little things that come into, you know, just everyday life, which kind of convolutes the creative process. But when it's like, okay, I'm here to fucking work, you know, I'm in this other city, it must just drive you a little harder.
I guess it did. I mean, I wasn't very consciously aware of it. Like, me as the singer, and you might understand this, it was more of a thing of, will I have enough time to sing these songs?
I know.
We all know that, you know, everybody waits till the end for the singer, and then it's like, you got 2 days to sing 8 songs. It's ridiculous.
No.
So we were able to pace ourselves to the point where I was doing a song a day, and even then I had, you know, had the time, and because I was living in the studio pretty much, I had so much time. There was no travel time like you're saying in the city, in your own hometown, there's still travel time and all the stuff you have to do when you're home. So I would just, you know, take me 3 seconds to walk back to where I was staying. And that would give me the whole evening to work out guitar solos and make last minute changes to the lyrics. And I never adjusted time-wise. So even though it was, you know, 7 in the morning in Vancouver, it was 10 in the morning for me. So I would wake up really early and no one was up, and I would just have complete silence to work on lyrics and guitars. And it was really, really, it was a different way. And I don't feel like I was, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to work. But when I look back on it, it's all I had to do. It's all that there was to do.
Absolutely. No, it's a great approach. I did that too. I rented an Airbnb for a record. I mean, I was living in Toronto and I rented an Airbnb in Toronto right across the street from the studio just so I could walk. It took me 2.5 minutes to walk there to the control room. And that way I had my own separation, you know, for the month and a half we did our last record. And I think that's really crucial. And exactly, it's interesting that you say you don't think about it. You know, you don't really understand. It's like, oh yeah, maybe this did help us make the best record of our career. But now that you've done it, you know, you kind of realize. So are you going to make another record with Garth in Vancouver?
Oh, well, we'd like to a lot. I mean, you know, I think we both parted, Garth and us, we both parted friends, you know, friends for life. I think both parties have expressed, you know, wanting to work again. I hope we can do that, and that would be amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, in terms of guitar solos, like, because that's another added thing I have to do, is I was very aware that being on the premises was helping my guitar solos. Like, that definitely helped, because I spent hours on them, crafting them, when I never do that on past records.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I just want to, you know, plug some of the tours you got coming up. You're going to be in Europe for festivals, Australia, and then more Europe later in the year with Volbeat. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, we've toured with Volbeat in the past, and they're really nice guys, and I was on their last record. The song actually went number one in America, so there's a connection there.
And yeah, that's incredible.
Going to be touring with Baroness on the tour as well, and we know those guys, and so I think it'll be a fun tour. It's funny, talking to people in Canada about Volbeat, a lot of people have only heard about them. But in Europe, they're like an arena-sized band.
It's a massive tour. And I saw that on your page. I was like, oh my God, that is a huge, huge tour to get.
Yeah, and we've known Volbeat since 06. So, like, I remember we played Copenhagen, and this guy knocked on our dressing room door and gave us his album. And I kept it, you know, and I remember. And then I see the guy, like, 8 months later or something, on the cover of Rock Hard magazine in Germany.
And wow.
I was like, that's that same guy who just knocked on our door. And I dug up the CD and I looked at the name on the cover and I looked on the CD and I go, that's him.
That's crazy.
Wow. And ever since then, of course, it's just gone higher and higher up. And that was Michael. And Michael's always been a very humble guy who, you know, says what he means, and he's true to his word. At least my dealings with him, he's been great. I mean, there was one time, this is going back 2012, you know, I saw him at a festival and I said, man, we got to tour together. You know, we have to. It hasn't happened yet. And then he just looked at me and he said, well, I'll see what I can do. And then 3 months later, we got an offer to tour with him in America. And so I really kind of, you know, he's a rare guy in this music industry where people just talk out of their mouth and don't really mean it.
Right.
So, right. Yeah, it's great.
Right. Is it hard for you guys to fit in? Because, you know, you can play with so many artists, you know, punk, metal, even something more kind of classic rock, but you never truly fit in, right? Is it difficult to kind of find that right thing, or are you just kind of used to being that band?
Well, we're a rock band. We're not a garage punk band anymore. You know, we're a rock band. Rock music doesn't have its own scene. As crazy as that sounds, it doesn't. Punk rock has you know, like so many streams. It's got websites. It's got festivals. It's got, you know, you can go on any part of the world and there's a punk rock scene. Same with metal. Metal, same thing. There's, you know, there's websites and there's festivals, but there isn't a, you know, true rock festival. It's always, you know, a rock band's on, you know, a festival as a way to diversify the roster or to add either a heaviness to the festival or to lighten up the festival. Like when we're on metal festivals, I feel like we're the
token rock band.
The token rock band, or you're just the break from all the death metal double kick, you know. so we're and that makes us stand out more. But I would love to be part of a. There's lots of rock bands, but we're kind of islands to ourselves, looking at each other rather than, you know, pulling it under one umbrella and turning it into a scene. And I think, especially for younger music fans, they tend to go with a tribe. And so they'll don the uniform on, and they won't like other tribes. At least in North America, it's very divided.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Which is part of why I love Europe so much. Because you know, you take a country like Germany, and you know the people aren't fickle. They're like, is it loud? Does it have guitars? I like it. You know, it's literally that's how they approach music, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, and so that's it's been a boon and you know, a little bit of a Achilles heel for us. So we've been able to capitalize on it, but also we've been penalized for it. So it all balances out in the end.
Well, it's great to see you guys doing so well with a great new record, and thanks for taking the time to do this, man. Anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
No, you actually rarely covered, I think, everything. I'm in interviews, I never really do that. So that's nice. Thanks.
Okay. I you know, try to do my homework the best I can, but you're a bit, other than the things you're obviously doing, you're a bit of an enigma, Danko. So, it's cool talking to you. It really is.
Oh, cool. Well, nice talking to you, and hopefully our bands can play together somewhere.
I'm sure I'll probably see you at a European festival in a year or two. I have no doubt in my mind. I'll find you. I'll knock on the dressing room door.
We'll probably meet somewhere in Germany or Finland rather than Young and Bloor.
I guarantee you that it's going to happen that way, man. Well, thanks, dude.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers. So there it is with Danko. What a busy guy. I want to thank him so much for taking time out of his very busy schedule to speak with me, and also apologize for having to cancel on him one time. But we made it happen, and make sure you go and check out all of his projects. Anyway, I will leave you with a tune so much to choose from. Danko Jones has a lot of albums, but I'm going to go with the first one I ever heard, a classic. Here is Bounce on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
I love your black, just your red lips, your long legs, your high heels. I love your thigh high boots, your snake skin one piece suit. Yeah, you really get me going when you put it all on.